I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lawrence Donegan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Shackelford. How are you doing, Shaq?
I'm doing fantastic. Just, you know, living the life here, watching the Mexico Open and watching the Academy Award nominees for Best Picture and not watching the match. So all's good.
Well, I have. We were recording earlier this week. I'm recording on a Monday evening, California time. So I watched a bit. Actually, you know what, Jeff? I'm not saying anything original. Night golf looks fantastic on TV. It just does. It really does. Just watching a couple of holes. Golf's terrible. But again, what do you expect on this? You will, amazingly, Lexi, hold a 40-footer or 30-footer for $200,000. But it's I'd take you made a deliberate ploy, not a policy, not to watch us. Yeah. Well, what is it? Is it the golf? Is it the players? Is it the golf course? What is it?
I only cover the majors now, Lawrence. You know, I don't do grow the game initiatives. I don't do those. And night golf, the quality of the golf has generally stunk in these things. So I'm sure it looks fantastic, and they
it does.
Open up the iris and the lights and that. But from the golfer's perspective, it's very hard. I can't remember any truly great shots under the lights, either in this or the Live last hole with Neiman or Phil and Tiger in Vegas. I just don't remember. Quality play under the it's hard. I mean, you need a lot of lighting to help to see the ball and see everything properly. Did I hear they were playing the ball lift clean and cheat? Or did I hear that as well? Or is that a joke on Twitter?
You know what? I don't think. Well, I know that I noticed. I wasn't paying particular attention. Actually, night golf. The one I remember because I'm aging myself now was Sergio and Tiger. I think that was at the what's that terrible golf course in San Diego with the bridges.
Oh, the bridges. Yep.
So, anyway, I played actually one note of interest. Played at the park, Palm Beach, Florida. I'm reading here off the press release. An excellent Gil Hans design. One thing I did or not is how much money it cost. I mean, astonishing amount of money for a municipal golf course. $55 million. Is that right?
I've seen that number. There's an endowment element. There's a clubhouse element. That I have seen that number. Yes.
that's kind of. I mean, is this meant to be a template for municipal golf as we move ahead? $55 million.
I've heard that mentioned that this is a template. The way this was structured and done, and I don't understand how that can be at that price tag. Maybe the way it's structured, because, you know, we do know that you want these projects, if you go to all this trouble, you want them to be maintained after the bulldozers leave. But yeah, I'm not privy to the breakdown of what that number entailed, but it was raised, I believe entirely privately. So if that's what floats, rich guys' boats, you know, so be it, but, it's a lot of money.
What was Harding Park? I remember back in the days I was discussing Harding Park. That was
one of the great,
and that was
robberies of all time. Yeah, $26 million, like in whatever early 2002 or 2003. I ripped it regularly on the blog because it was just so sad that I have no idea what happened there, but. You didn't hear much from that architect ever again, the in-house tour architect. And I think people got the message that, I mean, look, you have to, they wanted to have tournaments, and it was, I mean, we parked cars there. I remember parking, you know, in the 1998 US Open, getting out of the car. And it was just all, you know, wildflowers and it was not in good shape. A lot of clover, more clover than grass. And so I know they had to put in all that stuff, but That amount of money was a lot, especially for what they got, which was not exactly the most scintillating piece of architectural work. Beautiful property, beautiful trees, incredible setting, great. I mean, just idyllic land for golf in terms of the way it moves, and just such clumsy greens and bunkering and stuff that, man, it's why we're not hearing it mentioned again for another significant event, which is too bad. I was at the COVID PGA, and obviously it was, yeah, nobody really wants to, nobody has fond memories of that. It was so creepy and weird and bizarre. And but when you were out on the golf course, you just thought, gosh, wouldn't this have been great to have the golfers who play here out in the crowds? The energy would have been amazing. So the concept was good. The execution, not so hot. But they have, they've maintained it, right? I mean, that's the good news
Oh,
is
it's very well played, very well supported locally. It's actually we mentioned 26 million. I mean, the park in Palm Beach is private money, but that there was a part of public money in San Francisco. Public money went into Harding Park, and but yeah, I mean, you could have a debate about whether they need such narrow fairways and long rough for a municipal play. But it's you get a good deal if you live locally, and it's still a it's a wonderful walk, Harding Park. It really is, as you say. It's a beautiful piece of land, and it's right there on Lake Merritt. And
What did you call it?
I saw Lake Merced.
Merced
Sorry, yeah, I'm
Merritt?
thinking. I'm trying to anyway. Lake Merritt's in Oakland. Okay, I do the Lake Merritt 5K. Of course, I wouldn't expect upper posh LA to know anything about Oakland, but
No.
I'm a guy who's down and dirty in the streets here of Oakland. Anyway, anything other to say on the park? Have you seen any of the golf course? Gil
I
Hans's a
told you,
busy guy.
I told you I didn't want, I'm not watching it. I had a chance to finally get a root canal today, and I decided to get that done instead of watching the match. So I these grow the game things. I get the concept, but look at the, I don't know, you probably aren't looking at it, but there's an incredible debate over the NBA All-Star game and what a fiasco. It's a waste of time it's become. While the skills element is the dunk contest and the 3-point shooting and all that has still got merit and people enjoy it. But these, yeah, last what the last few weeks remind us of is that if you want to, and I hate the phrase, whatever, you want to raise awareness, you want to engage new people in the sport, exhibitions don't do it. It's just very simple. Competition, and I think we're going to probably discuss, I saw in your rundown a few of the cool stories from what was otherwise kind of a bland week, at least on the schedule, ended up producing some of those little stories that people will tell people about, or the local news will pick up, or will kind of filter out through the world of golf, or the world of sports. And those are the things that matter way more for our sport, at least. Maybe not the NBA, whatever, but that's a little different product. But in golf, there the things that we know happen, as in a week last week, are more important than these kinds of faux exhibitions, and with who I mean, who they got? Who is it? DJ
Well,
Khaled, or who we got?
it was. I mean, not
Badass
to.
punk daddy golfer guy
Oh,
that's
you
going to be
said
playing the
no.
Myrtle Beach qualifier. Like who we got?
No. I saw it was DJ Khaled and Charles Barkley played a couple of holes or a hole or two. I didn't watch. It was awful. It reminded me. I had PTSD from watching Condoleezza Rice a couple of weeks ago at Pebble Beach, taking a 15 going down the last. So I kind of switched my brain off at that point. Actually. A couple of two or three holes. Rose Zhang is magnificent. We're coming next week is the Alistair Mackenzie Invitational at Meadow Club. It's Cal Women's Golf annual game up there in Marin County. I went last year. Rose Zhang won it, and just I haven't seen her play much since. But just watching her play there tonight, she is what a beautiful golfer she really is. And actually, you know what? Bit of personality, really quite good.
Good.
But what I think you're onto something. It's just a lack of authenticity. Everybody in the booth is trying to. I mean, Charles Barkley is kind of just naturally funny, but there's too many voices, and everybody's trying to kind of have a bit of personality and character. There's just a general air of inauthenticity about it. The good thing is players are donating their time. lot of money going to various. I mean, I have my own personal views on First Tee, but First Tee seems to be making a ton of money out of it, which is great. I mean, I would hope that at some point, Youth on Course will start getting a lot of money, because Youth on Course is the greatest Grow the Game initiative right. in the world. It's just a magnificent organization. So hopefully they'll get something out of it. And if that's the case, then you kind of all for it in that sense. It's kind of harmless, not anything to get worked up about. But again, you haven't seen the golf course. It just looked like another. I'm beginning to get kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Somewhat tired of these kind of Gil Hans. They all begin to look the same. They're all kind of merging into stuff. I mean, it's, you know, but again, it's hard to see. They're only playing 12 of the 18 holes, so difficult. So, but again, does nobody else design golf courses in the United States? Does it just go hands to the state?
Yes, there are other people, but it is Florida, Lawrence. I mean, if you're struggling with this one, get ready. You've got a rough few weeks ahead. You've got your PGA National. No. Your Innisbrook and your at least TPC Sawgrass is a little bit different, but Bay Hill, it's a lot of Florida now, and frankly the Mexico Open course looked just like Florida if you didn't have the aerials of Puerto Vallarta.
I'm not being unfair. There's no water on the park, and it is a touch of this, you know, the waste areas, mm-hmm. and a touch of the same and all about it. But who knows? It's very hard to tell under the lights. And not anything to get worked up about. What is we should really get worked? No, we shouldn't. The Mexico Open finished. National Open, bit of a, there wasn't much. Didn't seem to be very Mexican, Jeff. Didn't seem to be much that was Mexican about the whole thing. The golf course, as you say, was, oh my God, it was a shocker, Jeff, wasn't it?
I mean, you haven't watched previous iterations of this event. You were.
There was one a few years ago that was some kind of narrow, tight little tree line golf course. I can't remember.
No, that was the WGC place. I'm forgetting the name of it, but the same Grupo Salinas. That was the WGC Mexico City. But no, this is the third year there.
This is the first one I've watched. Okay. I have to say. You go on about it all the time. You're so right. I mean, venues matter, don't they? They really do.
Well, coming after Riviera was particularly painful for this one, you know, where you have your history and your, you know, Hogan's Alley. And even though we didn't have the last two defending champions, you just know that all the greats have walked those fairways. That alone, you just can't put a dollar figure on what that means. And then... it's just kind of a maturity to it, even though I have my feelings about how Riviera's evolved. I equated it in the newsletter to a band going from playing the Hollywood Bowl on a perfect night to, you know, playing on a carnival cruise, you know, on the backstage. And I mean, it's just the transition is so jarring, and it the cart paths and the winner hits the fewest fairways since they've been doing shot length data since 1983 to win. Of course, if he missed the fairways, there's no rough. Not that that's a bad thing, but that said, Lawrence, I found it compelling. I thought the guys at NBC did an amazing job of investing you in two people that most people have never heard of. And I mean, I live in LA and I know nothing about Jake Knapp other than he played well at Torrey Pines recently. And Sami Välimäki, I hope I pronounced that correctly. He was, you know what, it was neat too. They're both a little bit unorthodox, you know, their stories are certainly unorthodox. Knapp looks like a 25 handicap over the putts. It's the most bizarre thing, you know, like the body language is stiff and weird. And then yet he has this beautiful rhythmic golf swing and wedge game. I mean, these little wedges he was hitting with this beautiful rhythm. And then you see him over a putt, you go, oh, that guy's like a 20 handicap. Like his stance was too wide. His grip, I know he's working hard on the grip pressure because he's got those biceps, but he looks like he's just strangling the putter and regripping it and all that. And then Välimäki's kind of, I don't know. He's just a player, you know, and he's just, so anyway, I actually enjoyed that they were Not, cookie cutter golfers. I know they're maybe not the top 20 in the world, but it ended up being okay.
Actually, speaking about Valimaki, I've got a bee in my bonnet. It's not a bee in my bonnet. I think it's amazing. The Scandinavian National Golf Unions are producing all these great
Amazing.
players, and they come out and you look at them and they're all, they've got great swings because they're locked up all winter and they're working on their technique and they're all physically, pretty, Ludvig, all these guys all look pretty good, and Valimaki shows up. I mean, the guy can play. He's like, you're dead right. He's a real throwback. He's just a big, heavy set guy. I think he's only 24.
I know, he looks a little older.
he really does. He was pretty. I mean, it was awesome. You're dead right. Jake Knapp, again, really good player. But I mean, you're looking at the Sunday. Actually, here's a question for you. I mean, the golf is awful. But I mean, you seem to. I
Well,
mean, I'm not.
it did get windy. I mean, that was a good wind they had. But yes, his driving was not great.
Well, neither of them. But I guess your point about competition is, in regardless, is kind of compelling in a way. So, but my goodness, I mean, as I say, I just thought I couldn't believe how pretty poor the golf was. But I mean, I guess it didn't have to. It doesn't have to be world class. I'm surprised that nobody came from behind. Anyway, God knows
Well,
what the. I mean.
they had just gotten out ahead and whatever. It's what happens in a golf tournament. And I just think the bigger story, Lawrence, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts, is another European tour player who's off this top 10 list, the Race to Dubai list, that's now earned this because of the operational joint venture partnership, aka the
That's what it's
Strategic
called these days.
Alliance. No, I'm sorry. That was the old name, brief name. The Strategic Alliance. These guys are playing the tour, and your FedEx Cup leaders, Matthew Pavon, and now you have Valimaki playing great. We know Thorbjørn Olesen's going to do something here in the coming weeks, the way he's been playing. So is this because is this a Ryder Cup bounce, Lawrence? Is this Europe is actually producing better players than it's been given credit for, but the world rankings kind of kept them stifled? Is it
They're,
coincidence? Is it the PGA Tour being weaker or because of LIV? Like, what do we got going on here?
well, I, the, I think you're right about the being stifled somewhat. Access has been curtailed over the years, and lo and behold, I wonder if there's somebody at a P, what do you call it? Is it the Global Home? Somebody at the Global
Global
Home.
home.
Yeah, I wonder if there's somebody there going, oh my God, that whiz bang idea we had last year, that was an absolute travel, disaster. Because I mean, I looked. I think there was five. I mean, if you go down the field in Mexico, the number of Europeans playing. I mean, guys, that not necessarily household names, but they're coming. Ben Taylor, Aaron Rye, Callum Terran, David Skins. David Skins like 40 years old at this stage. But anyway, but of the what do we call them? The DP World 10. I mean, there was five playing. And all five made the cut. They had Valimaki finish second. Bob McIntyre, Scotland's very own. I think he was T6. He actually had a sniff at one point. He missed a couple of shorties, and he kind of fell back. You had Victor Perez, you had Nikolaj Højgaard, and then you had Olsen. I think, Jeff, I wonder. This is probably ridiculous. That well, the USGA has now set up this development program in the US, but prior to that, it's pretty much been a kind of haphazard way of developing players. You guys come through the AGGA, and then they go to colleges. But the college coaches for years have been slightly ahead of that. They've been looking to Europe. A lot of guys, you look at it now, a lot of the colleges are bringing. I mean, I look at the college scoring whenever I can find it, and the number of European names that you recognize. So, the college coaches are going there because they know that the golf unions have been organized for 10, 15, 20 years, and they have methods of developing players. The Scandinavian golf unions, Germany, France, so they've been developing players for a long, long time in a very systematic way. And you just kind of wonder if what we're seeing now, now that there is more access to the PGA Tour for these European guys, you wonder if this is the what's happening now is a product of that more structured development system in Europe. So, it's just a thought. And, you know, because of the haphazard way that guys come through in the States, you wonder if, you know, guys have been missed, talent's been missed, people, good players, talented players are taking the wrong development pathways. And lo and behold, we get to 2024 and the United States. I mean, if this is teaching us anything, Jeff, I mean, these guys, I hate using the term mules, the PGA Tour mules, they have been shown up for what they are, you know, overpaid and overrated, mostly by themselves. I mean, these European guys are coming over and kicking their backsides. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, it does. The only thing I would say is that you know, fun thing with Valimaki was that he's not orthodox looking. I mean, the only thing missing was a cigarette in his mouth. You know, he just looked like a guy from a player from the 70s, which is great. That's not a knock, but I just wonder.
Well,
I mean, you know, we've always wondered this, and I think we're wondering it more than ever right now, as it relates to the big picture argument about the future of professional golf. But I know this is a weird thing, but I go back to the CBS had to kill that time at Torrey Pines on Saturday night. They had like 25 minutes and you had the interviews with Jaeger, Højgaard, and Matthew Pavon, and all three guys not speaking their native language. And this may sound condescending. I don't care. They were articulate. They were worldly. They were smart. They were courteous. And you know, you put a lot of our guy. And by the way, everybody who talked about meeting Jake Knapp and has mentioned him mentions how humble and cool he is. Like a somebody who's experienced life a little bit, you know, and he lost his grandfather, who was his big source of inspiration in his life. He's 29. He's been through life a little bit. And you just have to wonder if the system in the U.S., which is, as you know, is generally fantastic, and we're in agreement, the college system is producing good players. But you do have to wonder if these guys who've put a little time in PGA Tour Canada or the European Tour and seen the world a little bit more and had to adapt to, it's an age-old topic, but are they just a little more seasoned and grizzled and I don't want to say layered, but more interesting human beings who just it makes them a better golfer ultimately when it comes down to kind of pressure moments. And I mean, it's not like Knapp was hitting, by the way, just horrendous drives. He just wasn't. Yeah. He just didn't hit a lot of fairways. But my point is they seemed like those guys handled the pressure well. And I just have to wonder if that's part of their rise at the moment. And so there are several other guys. And by the way, other than Nick Dunlop, most of the winners so far this year in all of world golf have been people in their late 20s and 30s. Yeah. Not a lot of super young players. So, and you know how I feel about that. So we expect ridiculous things from young players when we know the way this game is played. That extra time and seasoning and seeing the world and having some perspective and having gone through some life stuff. When you get under pressure, those things make you better. And I just wonder how much the AJGA college private jet trainer food, you know, all that is great and makes people better, but does it also weaken, soften them, I guess, a little bit?
Yeah, your point is very well made. You look at Brooks Koepka, again, not a superstar at Florida State, went off with his buddy Uline. They went off and played in Europe. Brooks Koepka's first win as a professional was the Spey Valley Challenge in Scotland, I think it was 2012. And, you know, taught him how to play golf in all sorts of conditions, taught him a bit of you know, self-sufficiency, traveling around the world, him and his mates losing their bags, going to bars. you know, just more rounded. You talk about Jake Knapp, a more rounded individual has had a look on the other side. You know, he was a nightclub bouncer. You know, what motivation in golf, Jake? Well, not to be a nightclub bouncer is one.
Right.
You mentioned Valiami's technique. Here's what would have happened with Bob McIntyre. Bob McIntyre, as everybody knows, comes from a place called Oban, which is way out in the west coast of Scotland. Yeah. There's one terrible golf course there where he learned how to play golf. If Bob McIntyre had been living in the States, his family was a working class family. He wouldn't have been able to play on the AGGA. He just wouldn't have been. He would have been in a remote part of, let's say, North Dakota. Okay, the equivalent of. So Bob McIntyre, if he was an American, he probably would never have been discovered. He would never have developed into the golfer that he was. And his technique is far from orthodox. But there was a golf union. There was a structure. Scottish Golf got a hold of him and gave him opportunities. You know, and through those opportunities, he became the golfer that he became a good. He won the Scottish Amateur. He almost won the British Amateur, the Amateur Championship. Sorry, and here he is now. He's going to do pretty well on the PGA Tour. That thing wouldn't have happened to an American kid. You know, the American version of Bob McIntyre. And I just wonder if this is what we're reaping now. Incidentally, you mentioned the AGGA. I did a quick check of my annual, or not Uh-oh. Annual, monthly. Monthly, you know, if the the AGGA financial accounts, I think they're not out yet for 2023, but I think I can safely predict that the CEO of a junior golf tour is going to break the $1 million salary package. He fell just short in 2022. He had $835,000 salary and $97,000 in benefits. I'm taking that as his 401k. I mean, just to give you again, we talk about national golf unions. The entire elite budget, performance budget for Scottish golf in 2022 was about £300,000. So let's make it $400,000. Half the salary of the CEO of the AGGA. Anyway, that will hopefully with the USGA's development program, which is going to open up all sorts of pathways for aspiring young golfers. So looking forward to it. And it'll take maybe 5, 10, 15 years, but when it's all said and done, the United States will be producing, they will be kicking everybody's backside all around the world. I don't care where you're from, Sweden, Korea, and hopefully it'll kill the AGGA. Jeff, we should move on. Looking at the leaderboard from Sunday, the finishing leaderboard, I mean, I haven't seen any TV audience numbers. It would be pretty. It's going to be disastrous, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. And it is unfortunate because the football season's over. There just wasn't a lot of competition. The Daytona 500 had been run. You know, the things at this time of year that compete with golf and for the tour to be wheeling out this event. The week after Riviera with a rough field. I mean, they don't have a lot of star power as it is. And then to have this, and like I said, the NBC guys did the best they could. They were there. Somehow Comcast didn't make them do it from Connecticut, which is a miracle in itself. I think Grupo Salinas spent the money to have them there because I saw Golf Central was there, so they wouldn't be there if they weren't being paid to be there. So, the ratings won't be great, but I mean, when the tour is looking to try and get a kind of a stronghold or to maintain its stronghold on ratings, this was not a time to have that event. And of course, the Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches is this week, and I mean, I know Rory's playing, and everybody's excited about the Seminole Pro member the following Monday. Well, not everybody, actually. And, it's such a window for them to, and you're just not putting out your best events. And they would counter, I'm sure, with, well, we have Bay Hill and the players coming up. So yeah, you do, but every week right now at this time of year is your chance to really get big audiences. It's cold in big parts of the United States. People like to watch people in warm places. So just a But again, they all made the best of it, and I was entertained. I didn't expect to be, and I was very entertained. And again, because I think we just got to see some, it's just nice to see some non-cookie cutter
Yeah.
golfers and
Okay.
and guys playing for something that meant really meant a lot. The money meant a lot to them, the perks that came with it. And I mean, Valimaki just went for it on the last hole. We won't discuss their whole confusion there with boundary lines and fences that aren't boundary fences, even though they're right on the boundary. And he didn't get relief, but somebody earlier in the week did, and that was all kind of lame. But yeah, they put on a good show, all things considered.
I this is how sad I am. I found myself on Saturday night frantically searching all corners of the internet and as live streaming to see if I could get a stream of the Oman Masters. Speaking of
Yeah, you need help.
leaderboards, I do need help. Well, it was eventually the tournament itself. Actually, their leaderboard was excellent. Carlos Ortiz, he won it by two from Louis. And then we had Joaquin Neiman, Mita Pereira, Peter Uihlein, Matthew Wolff were all in the top 10. But the one that got me, Jeff, I know I'm going on and on and on about this, but this kid, Samson Zhang, the Cal kid, he was tied second going into the final round. This is a kid who shot 65 at Royal Melbourne on a 30 mile an hour wind at the Asia Pacific. What a player. I am so, again, we're talking about Harding Park. It's the Goodwin, the Stanford event's coming up at the Harding Park, the Goodwin at the end of March, and that'll probably be my last chance to see Samson Zhang play as as an amateur. I can't wait. I'm counting the days. What a player that kid is. So there's that. Yes, it says something when the Asian Tour has a better leaderboard, or arguably a better leaderboard than the PGA Tour. Here, the other one, just quickly rounding up. I did write. I made a note here to talk about the DP World Tour. I can't even remember who won it, Jeff. Can you remember? Probably not. No.
I can when I because my newsletter's open. Darius van Driel of the Netherlands.
Good for him.
Yeah, I think a far more compelling event finish was the first Africa amateur at Leopard Creek. I don't know if you watched. I put the highlights in the newsletter, the
I
YouTube
did.
highlights. I don't know how the course was set up, but when you know that golf course from previous DP World Tour events, the play was, I mean, just incredible. To break that course record the day after somebody had tied it, and knowing the multiple pros owned it,
Was
that's
it Keegan Shutt? Yeah, Keegan Shutt
yeah,
shot
teeing off the
62.
10th tee. I mean, just totally out of the event.
And beat Kristen Maas, a Texas sophomore, I think he is. He shot 63 the day before, which had tied a course record.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I assumed that he was the winner would get who was I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Alton van den Meer or something.
Yeah.
I thought he would get an invite to the Masters. I got that wrong, but he does get an invite to the Open and the Dunhill.
I suspect the goal is to start here, and then eventually Augusta National maybe would do it. But they've already got, quite a few amateur spots they're giving right now. But yeah, I think the first year it's the right way to do it. I mean, the
Yeah.
RNA gave a spot to him, the winner, to the Open at Troon. So,
That's a big
and the
deal.
amateur that and the Alfred Dunhill. So it had plenty of perks, and yeah, I think year one they had to see, and they need to see what kind of players they get. And but I definitely would think that's on the radar of Fred Ridley and friends to eventually start inviting that player, because yeah, I just think it, again, on well, back to our Grow the Game talk, that kind of stuff is, we know, more significant, frankly, than entertainment crap that is just meant to sell some Capital One credit cards and different things. And these things have much more meaning. And by the way, I don't know if you in your late night Saturday scanning of the leaderboards of the world, but the Latin America amateur champion played in the Mexico Open, Santiago de la Fuente, and he made the cut, which is fantastic. And so yeah, I mean, it's just these amateur events they're creating are I mean, I'm assuming that's why he got in the Mexico Open. I know he played last year or the year before. Anyway, and by the way, Alvaro Ortiz played Carlos's brother.
Wow.
Did you
I
know
saw
Carlos had dropped to 1286 in the world?
Oh
So,
my God.
yeah, he had. I mean, that was you were talking about somebody who was one of the PGA Tour's up and coming young stars not too long ago, and obviously I get it. The live events you take away the points, but it shows he hasn't done diddly squat when he's played in a non-live event. So that was a big win for him. I didn't see what he jumped to. It doesn't matter. He's not going to get anything. But to your point, yeah, it was a good leaderboard, and to just to segue, so here's Liv building this momentum. In fact, I don't think I saw this on your rundown, so I'm going to go right off the run. I'm going to
Yeah.
go
Oh,
way off script here.
can I
Wait,
just
and let me
go
land the
ahead?
plane.
All
Let me
right.
land the
Okay.
plane.
Yeah.
So Liv is building this momentum. They've got more players. They deserve some ranking points in some way. I don't think full for 72 holes. They've had a great start. The PGA Tour's had a horrible start. And what do?
Yeah.
They've invited Anthony Kim to just remind you that it is a circus. It's a freak show. It's a joke. They put out a promo today. I mean, what an embarrassment. They are so dumb. I cannot fathom how you can be this stupid. You're finally getting some momentum to legitimacy, and you're just going to wheel out a freak who's been away from the game on for a dozen years because Greg Norman thinks the kids will be excited. And what tools? What just total tools? Anyway.
No, well, I'll come on. Just running out of talking about the magic. A great name, by the way, Magical Kenya Open. Just a quick shout out to Ronald Rugameo from Uganda, who held a great putt on the Friday night, made the cut, then finished dead last. But anyway, yeah, you are right. The Anthony Kim thing. Yeah, and it's not even Jeff. It's not even like, okay, it's a sponsor's invite. You pass it off as one sponsor's invite. Let's see how he does. He gets to play for the rest of the season. He's a
Oh,
he's
is that
yeah well,
clear?
as I on yeah I think it was well, it certainly
Okay.
was to me. So he plays for the rest of the season. It's just amazing the lack of. I'm constantly amazed, Jeff, at the stupidity of people in charge of golf. And
Yeah.
you look at this, and as your point is so well made about building some credibility, even skeptics like me, and maybe I don't know how you're a skeptic, I'm guessing, obviously.
Yeah.
And but temperamentally and emotionally disinclined, even people like you and I would have to admit, okay, I've got something, maybe got something going on here, and lo and behold.
It's stunning. I mean, it's just stunning. And then Greg Norman's taking credit for it apparently, because if you go by the accounts that have been very accurate, flushing it and the other live one. Anyway, they get fed good information and they've been generally accurate, and they put it out there that this is what Greggy drove the ship on this one. And you just go, well, there you go. There's Greg Norman in a nutshell. Because anybody else who's looking at this from a business perspective should have been smart enough to say, gosh, we're actually finally making some progress and legitimacy delivers the value, to put it in business parlance, and exhibition freak shows do not. And that's the part it's not even like the guy has been playing some tune-up events and has been showing signs. I mean, there's just no reason other than some weird rewriting of history and somebody remembering that he ran and he was sort of energetic and young at a time. And then there's a, I believe me, I mean, I'll watch. It's fascinating. I'll watch when the CW replay is, if KTLA is so kind this weekend to show it, which so far we never know. But yes, there's a freak show factor, but in terms of the big picture, and again, the best thing that Liv did was that play-in event, which produced three players who
Correct.
legitimately earned their way to it. from three different countries. I mean, just dreamy kind of stuff. If you live and you're saying to the World Golf Ranking, "Hey, we had a play-in event, and we'll probably do it again next year," and now you throw this out there, and they'll just say, "Well, yeah, but wait, what? You just yeah." And look, I understand the PGA Tour's had sponsor exemptions forever. Babe Zaharias played the LA Open in 1937 on an invite. There's always been a Tony Romo. I mean, we could go through the list. There've been a lot of those, but where LIV is right now, it is a mind-boggling choice. So, we'll see how it plays out.
I guess they're just going for the sugar hit. Again, it's hardly a long term or even a medium term strategic play. As you say, it undercuts everything that they've been doing. I did text somebody who's in Jeddah. have you seen it? My guy there is saying, I haven't seen him. So he's not been there for a week practicing or learning the golf course. No surprise there.
But
Maybe
he did film an elaborate or well, I don't know. They made it look elaborate promo video I saw.
I mean, they really are setting. God, if he goes out and shoots 75, 75, 75, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I don't think it really matters what he shoots. It just does to me. It's just more of what the statement you're making, that you're building a tour. You want this credibility. You want ranking points. You want to be taken seriously, and you're doing this. It doesn't matter what he shoots, as far as I'm concerned. It's just, I mean, he could play great and whatever, but the point is, they are trying to work within the confines of what the rankings demand, and they've been somewhat doing that, other than the 54 hole thing, which they're not going to budge on. It's their concept, and I understand that. And at some point, the world ranking is going to have to budge and figure out a way to award points based on that number of holes, as they should for a PGA Tour event that's shortened to 54. That Pebble Beach event getting full points is just a joke. It's ridiculous, because we know there is a difference between 3 rounds and 4 rounds, and it's very hard to put together 4 straight days of great golf, and we've seen it over and over again. And everybody in a tournament has one day, or at least one, where they just, like Jake Knapp did on Sunday, he just got it around somehow after 2 great rounds, by the way. And we should note that, by the way, he played really well the
Yeah, he
two
did.
days before. But look, it's a weird game, and it's a weird sport, and I mean, we just don't ever see it happen for even the greatest of all time. One of those 4 days in a tournament was just it just didn't feel as good when they woke up or whatever, and that's why that concept needs to not get full points for playing 3 rounds of golf.
And that's usually the worst round of the four is the one that kind of defines the week. It
That
really
too.
does. Can you turn that was, the great days, the Halcyon days, Tiger would turn that 75 into a 71 or a 70 or
Exactly.
whatever.
And there's beauty in that. The beauty of golf is people who play the game appreciate that person got it around on the day they weren't feeling it, and they made it work. And they it's another one of those little nuanced things about golf that, if you follow the sport, you admire that person turned what probably should have been a 78 into a 72 kind of thing.
There was a while there. I'm just thinking about Rory at Augusta, where he would turn a 73 into a 75 or a 74 into a 74. But more recently, he's actually been able to turn the 75 into a 71. He just hasn't shown up with his 67s. And maybe this is the year we live in hope. Speaking of Augusta National, Jeff, clearly Shackelford speaks, and the green jackets follow. Three invites announced last week to Augusta. The one that you were asking for, Joaquin Niemann, he got his. Ryo Hitsatsune got his, a Japanese player. And the third one, Jeff, who was the third one off the top? Oh, it was
Thorbjørn Olsen.
Thorbjørn Olsen. Dead right. I mean, Augusta's got that right, isn't it? Thorbjørn Olsen, why did he get one, I wonder? I mean, it's not like there's no Danes in the field.
No, but if you go off of Datagolf, which is trying to do a ranking that is including all tournaments, he'd be third. I think it was 34th or 35th in the world. So I would not be surprised if they consult something, either that ranking or their own. You know, the PGA of America kind of has their own. But that to me is what that just jumped out to me is when you saw that number, you realize, yeah, he's had some really good golf in the last year, and that's what they were rewarding. I was a little less enthused about Ryo Hisatsune. I felt a little youth desperation syndrome in this one, Lawrence. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong,
I'm a fan.
Oh, I'm sure he's a. I don't doubt. I'm not questioning his talent and his upside because that seems to be pretty unanimous from people who've watched him play. I have not seen him play, but this Rika Yu, I don't know. I'm Hoshino. Let's just go with Hoshino. I don't want to butcher his first name. Yeah, I mean, he just won in Qatar and he finished second in the Australian Open, whereas. I also finished second in the Australian PGA too, to Cam Smith. Anyway, I was a little surprised he was not the traditional, even though they all deny it, Japanese television sponsor exemption person. And there's still time, by the way. They could, if he plays well one or two more weeks, they may invite him. That's what they do. Some of those special invites have come down the last minute. Curiously, though, you know, they don't list them year by year in their amazing media guide because a few of writers we've been conversing, like, is there a page where you can see all these? And everybody was trying to figure out three and one was a big deal for them. Usually it's one, but so no, they did the right thing. I mean, they want to have a good field and they still may invite one or two more. You never know. Sami could finish second the next 3 weeks and they may invite
that
him.
That would be awesome.
You never know. So they do feel that way. But yeah, all in all, they did the right thing. And I think what we discuss is they don't like controversy. They want to have the best field they can within reason. They don't want to have 100 players. But it just got that out of the way. It was a smart move. They did it the week that there wasn't a whole lot going on. It was just typical Augusta, well conceived in pretty much every way. Other than I think you could make a better case for Hoshino in terms of merit. But I get it. It's golf likes the upside play.
You made the point I was going to make. They kind of just generally get it right, Augusta, don't they? They just do. It's, you know, good custodians, really. You have to say. In recent times, they've had a really good record as a quotes unquote custodian of the game. It's been good for them. Although the Neiman thing, I did laugh when they announced the invitation that they mentioned none of his LIV achievements,
yeah.
Actually. But, yeah.
Yeah. That was not subtle, but yeah, and it helped that he's a former Latin America amateur champion. But I really believe the thing that made it easy for them is the effort he was making, and other guys on LIV weren't making the effort he was making to try to show that he's and I think you, how can you not admire that? I just think you have to admire that because he's flown a lot of miles trying to chase these points in non LIV weeks.
And actually, I would put him in amongst my, you know, if I'm writing down half a dozen names right now, who could win the Masters? I mean, he's got a perfect game for it. Hits it long enough. Hits it high enough. And knows how to win. Clearly, desperation is the wrong word, but his enthusiasm for chasing it, I'm sure that impressed him. Just on Hisatsune, Jeff, I think in the space of 2 years, Hisatsune won his card on the Australian PGA Tour, the Japanese Tour, the Asia Tour, the European Tour, and the PGA Tour. I mean, that guy is just—he's awesome. So I'm glad to see him, and I'm sure Neiman's a better prospect to win it. You thinking about the match? I am, but you probably aren't. You're a bit more seasoned.
What do you mean?
Well,
I cover the majors. What do you mean? Yeah. I'm working on my pre-masters content pieces right now as we speak.
Oh, yeah.
I only cover the major. I'm
was going to
working, yeah.
say.
Oh, I don't have a problem telling you. I'm working on a piece, and thankfully, somebody kindly, who's much better at doing this stuff, actually randomly asked me if they could help on something statistically. And I said, well, yeah, I would like to try to see if the front nine, the way the front nine plays has changed a little bit in a way that's taken a little something away from the golf course. I think it's gotten a little too hard. And there's some holes that were sort of three or five type holes, easy potential birdie, potential easy bogey, that have just been turned into hard pars. And that's really kind of goes against the beauty of what makes Augusta National great. So I want to see if I can prove that statistically, and then also wax on about routing and the beauty of the ebb and flow of a course, having those moments instead of. And I mean, everybody knows the obvious candidate that's a problem is the seventh hole and stuff like that. Anyway, so I'm working on that. I mean, I'm actually going ahead and I've been working on some stuff related to the PGA and the Open Championship. I'm wide open for ready for all ideas on the on Pinehurst. But yeah, marching. That's what we do at the Quad, Lawrence. We don't write Players
We don't jump.
Championship previews. We don't do Bay Hill previews. We do cover Riviera because it's almost a major at this point with the field, and although not this year, it took a hit. But yeah, I'm totally. I mean, it's not that far away, Lawrence. And these events
Yeah.
here tell us who's. I mean, Riviera always is a great barometer. So Matsuyama, if he stays healthy. Definitely a player to keep an eye on. Again, not that he wasn't, but winning at Riviera and shooting his, I mean, I've been still thinking about his 62 quite a bit, and I don't think that quite got enough hype as to what a magnificent round of golf that was. I mean, one of the
Yeah,
best rounds
really.
played
Yeah.
in professional golf in the last few years, for sure. And there have been a lot of low ones, as we know. Even
It's
though
been a few years
even
since.
though the Nobody's breaking records, according to my friend Brandel. So there's no need to do anything about the ball. But I mean, is a week go without a course record being broken?
I can't say. Yeah. The I haven't. It's been, well, I don't know, six or 7 or 8 years since I've been at Augusta. Yeah, the fifth's a problem, Jeff. The fifth's just a slog now,
Yes, that
for the
is.
length, and then you get to that green at the end of that slog, and it's just
Well,
that,
that's the
yeah.
thing, is the green is its defense, and so the tee shot they just didn't get right in terms of the taking on the risk to get the short iron in. It's just too long from where they got it, or the bunkers are too far forward, and Bobby Jones was really explicit on that one. That's why that one's a little bit hard to take. But number four is although I say that, then I start going through the numbers, and number four has always played hard, but it just feels like it's almost a short par four at this point. Number one's the other hole that I just it's just gotten kind of it's just odd. It's an odd tee shot. It's an awkward tee shot, and the bunker's been shifted in a way that doesn't encourage you to take it on. It was such a beautiful bunker in the old photos. Oh. There's a photo in the media center, which you haven't been to, excuse me, the press building. I'm got to work on my jargon, got to get in my master speak in the press building. And the bunker is just so, you see, it's just so beautifully cut into the hill. And as a good player, it makes you just want to kind of take it on and just hug it around it and get it over it. Now it's just this big, deep kind of pit for it's just brutal, and there's no incentive to take it on, and that's why you see everybody just bail out left. So those four holes in particular, to me, are the ones that have changed a lot in terms of that. The front nine becoming more of a hang on for dear life nine instead of, chance to
Yeah.
get hot and get out early and shoot 31 or something.
Yeah, and with five, if you get the ball near the pin on five, it's almost luck, it seems to be at this stage. Anyway, well, I'm
Yeah.
sure. Look forward to that, Jeff. And the Masters in a few weeks. Actually, you mentioned Pinehurst. I will be in Pinehurst next week. I'm going to the Wake Forest, whatever it's
Oh.
called, Wake Forest Invitational. Yep, I'm going down to see our lad now playing for
Where, what
Northwestern.
course?
I think it's number two.
Oh, wow. Oh,
So yeah,
holy
so he
cow.
is He's using his initiative. He's, I think he's got a call lined up with the caddy who won the U.S. Open there in 2000. Well, he didn't. Craig didn't win the U.S. Open, but so yeah, I'm looking forward to it. See what the golf course is like. Get a bit of a scouting report for the U.S. Open.
Have you been
and get to see? Pinehurst? I have been to Pinehurst. Yeah. I was there first time in 2005 when I was going to say Twin Tiger won, when Michael Campbell won. So yeah, it's a completely different golf course, obviously. Since I mean, that was just a bombing. I mean, we're not bombing gouges. I mean, my memory of that is just following Tiger around all day, and the rough was just absurd, and how he was able to gouge out the rough. It was he didn't have his best that week, and he almost won it. But good on Michael Campbell, very underrated player. He was a great player at one point in the European Tour, and he won the US Open. I don't know why people tend to make fun of him or mock him. It's preposterous. We should move on anyway, Jeff. We're almost kind of at the end of this, I think. A couple of things, Jeff. I did notice you in the newsletter, you did a long piece. That's a quadrilateral, for those who don't know. It's on Substack. It's absolutely essential reading. A couple of times a week. Sometimes I lose track, Jeff. I know I get two every week, but sometimes I get some extra. So that's good. That's a bit of bargain for my, I think it's $50 a year. Well worth, if you don't subscribe, then my goodness, you got to start subscribing. You did a long piece on the coverage of Charlie Woods playing in the pre-qualifier for the Cognizant at Palm Beaches, whatever it's called.
What is your Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches, the CC at the PB.
Yeah, fuck off. Absolute nonsense, these names. I can't keep up with them. Not my age. I know you only cover the majors, Jeff. That's why I was surprised you seem to get into a bit of a lather over this. It was.
Well, you know me. I mean, anytime there's youth desperation syndrome, I feel the need to break from my model. But I did think there were a few things worth pointing out. I mean, besides just the grotesqueness of it, which I think you would agree. It was.
I would. Yeah. I would hate. I mean, a couple of people over the years might have questioned my parenting style, and that's fine. But it's one of those guaranteed to get the hackles up. So I'm loath to. I saw Elin, Charlie's mum was here. That was the only point I would make. Why? What was the point in this? But anyway, your point.
The pre-qualifier was created because there are a lot of dreamers out there, and I don't have a problem with that. I played LA Open amateur qualifying when they had it, and I have a feeling, my gut tells me Tiger probably tried to explain to Charlie, you're wasting your time. This is not where you should be playing. And then he persisted, and he probably went, you know what? Fine. You go learn your lesson. Because Tiger didn't show up, and he learned his lesson, I'm sure. But unfortunately, he had to deal with some things that nobody should have to deal with on site. That was beautifully documented by a Palm Beach Post writer named Emily Smar. Good for her. But of course, then you had the creep factor of the PGA Tour announcing that he was playing in it. That was the biggest really more than anything, was the gaffe of all gaffes. And then, of course, you have your live blog, your video crew waiting for him in the parking lot, the Getty Image photographer who's taking photos of his bag, very artsy stuff, again, doing his job, whatever. But they ran all this stuff, never mentioned what he shot, deleted the live blog, and you know, there's an underlying element here. I don't know the... I have no way of proving this, but I have seen through the years that when a tournament by the PGA Tour is run by its championship management division, the communications media operation has to treat it a little bit differently and take more interest. And the tour has taken over the Honda Classic, and the championship management is part of the future strategic sports group, PGA Tour Enterprises, the whole thing. It's part of the for-profit side of the tour. So I just felt like there was some element to driving this on the business side that, yeah, we're going to rebuild this Cognizant Classic of the Palm Beach. I can't even say it without laughing. We're going to build this tournament up, and this is part of that. And even though Tiger is now essentially the de facto chairman, it just blew my mind that they could be so tacky I know they've done this before, but it was just tacky on a level that warranted a to me a rant. And then of course, just who are these people? Get a life, getting out there bringing Tiger's book up to Charlie to them sign it and haggling with police guards or security or whoever was out there, if it was actual police or security. Just a bunch of creeps. Get a life. I mean, I get wanting to come out and see the kid play, but most normal people would stay far away and just take in the golf and so yeah,
Well, I
massive creep
mean,
factor.
yeah, massive creep factor. Actually, I noticed our friend Ryan at Monday Q Info. He tweeted out that he'd heard about this, that Charlie was going to play. He'd heard it a few days in advance, didn't publicize it, just left it out there. If you're sad enough to be looking at the fields for PGA Tour pre-qualifiers, and you found his name, then by all means.
Right.
But if that floats your boat, I mean, I mean, I'm sort of the kind of sadder that does look at fields for pre-qualifiers for PGA Tour events. If I'd seen Charlie Woods' name, I wouldn't have gone. But I'm sure there's some sad souls who would have gone to have a look. But for the tour to do it, for the tour to publicize it, I mean, they're just setting the kid up for harassment. I mean,
Yeah.
it's quite, again, some guy, it really pisses me off. This PGA Tour social media, I say it all the time. I mean, they are the pits, the absolute pits. And this was their hall of infamy is pretty crammed at this stage, but the Charlie Wood
Yeah.
stuff was right in there. The other one, they were at it on Sunday. I mean, we're a stupid podcast, and we're not affiliated with the PGA Tour. We're not trying to promote the PGA Tour. But on Sunday, the PGA Tour's Twitter feed was promoting the bad golf. I guess there's something kind of funny about this. They did a series of photographs of Jake Knapp's shot tracers off the tee. My goodness. Actually, his duck hook on two was something to behold. But anyway, this was pretty bad, low rent stuff from PGA Tour social media. Again, who knows who's in charge of this? I mean, don't they have a highly paid head
Yes,
of
they do.
comms? Oh, they do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the salary is, but
$750 last time I looked, which is pretty
wow.
revolting. Yeah,
That's. I mean,
$750,000 for.
I'm sure I could do an equally bad job for. I'd do it for $275 or
Look, you're
whatever.
dealing with somebody who tweeted out hitting a 30 million views mark on video related to a special needs a young woman. You just the screw. There are no scruples there. It's a deeply broken operation at the top, and it's been apparent for a long time. And they should be ashamed. But there have been multiple instances where they just aren't. I would push back a little on the content related to the crooked tee shots. I mean, because we. In the past, they went so far out of their way to block any video put up that showed something slightly negative about a player. That, yeah, I guess that I'm thinking of the history of their social media that they went from whitewashing to. I mean, I wouldn't have done that. It's kind of an odd one, but at least it's about the golf. It's about the leader. It's what people are talking about. And hey, he went on to win. So it ends
Yeah.
up being a happy story. But it's about the golf and the golfers. And social media is a reminder to make you watch. And you're going, wow, this guy's hitting it all over the place. Maybe I should tune in to see if he can hang on. I get that part. But getting into to children and special needs kids to get clicks and. It's just wow, breathtaking. It's just breathtaking.
Anyway, it's just you're talking about the, it's just the witlessness of it. Show some imagination, some wit, and some
Yeah.
originality. And there's none of that, but we've gone on about
No,
this before.
no.
Actually, speaking of, another week has gone past, Jeff. Maybe I missed it. Have the public investment fund and the PGA Tour come to some, have they sorted out the future of world golf?
No. Jon Rahm referenced it, and I don't know if you watched that interview with Marty
I did
Smith.
not.
Some
I saw
lovely
this.
piano music and score set, and the fireplace is just roaring. It was an odd setting. I don't know what the setting was. It wasn't explained, at least not in the press release. But he did mention that that was one of the things that when he that made him flip in terms of his view of Liv was the signing of that agreement. And I thought about it more today, randomly while I was waiting for my iPhone to be repaired. By the way, Apple, the Apple Store experience, unbelievable. Anyway, they're amazing. And you know, he implied that that sort of was a freeing thing, and we knew when that agreement was made that that was a possibility. And wow, to hear him say it, and then I mean, there's all the other usual nonsense about putting food on the table for the family, and the other good reveal was that Tiger has totally ghosted him, just totally, just blew him off. Rory didn't. Rory's too nice, but Tiger just gave him the, and he, you know, Tiger's is kind of, he idolizes Tiger, so that had to be a little awkward for him. But that's a long way of saying no, there is no progress on the agreement, and I'm sure not feeling it, are you?
Definitely not. Again, we are now, well, what are we? We're in,
Yeah,
coming into
we're getting
March.
close to the 1 year anniversary.
Well, not quite that is stretching,
All
but
right.
we aren't. We're blown past the deadline by 2 months.
Yeah.
And from, you know, we talked about it last week. The level of trust between the two sides appears to be subterranean. This is not happening because, you know, it's not happening. And goodness knows, I saw Greg Norman seeing today somewhere was talking about, yeah, admitted we are trying to get Hideki. We've been, you know, and we'll,
Yeah.
they get Hideki. I did see, I mean, I floated a couple of weeks ago. Of course, it wouldn't happen and he wouldn't accept, but why wouldn't you have a run at Rory McIlroy if I'm Liv Golf?
Oh, well, what did you make of Chubby Chandler's
Oh, it was chubby,
comment?
wasn't it?
Said,
Yeah, that's yeah.
what did
It's
you
not
think of his
well.
assessment?
Again, you know, why wouldn't you have a go? I mean, it won't. Rory wouldn't go there. Why would he go there? He doesn't need the hassle. He doesn't need the, you know, he doesn't. He does. He doesn't need
No,
that.
no.
But.
And just to explain for people listening, if Chubby's premise was that the way Rory has changed his tune and the things he said, he felt like that he was reading the tea leaves, that this is him laying the groundwork possibly to take an offer, and then he valued him at whatever, 900 million or something like that. Anyway, I'm with you. I don't see Rory being that interested in I think he's
Yeah.
doing it to make it go away, get it off his plate. And yeah, if he makes some guys mad, and I'm sure there is an enjoyment factor in annoying some of these hotheads on the policy board who just want to run a big AJGA tour and are oblivious to kind of where things are going in the world. And so I think he may, maybe there's like I'd put it like 20% trolling and 80%. I want to win. I want to win majors. I want to win tournaments, and I want to take advantage of my remaining years of my peak skills. And I'm tired of you people, and I just want this to go away. That's where I see about 80% of it. But there might be a little trolling. I mean, come on. I mean, it's got to be a little fun to annoy Patrick Cantlay
Actually,
if you're Rory.
I don't, I don't have the field in front of me, but Rory's doing him a real favor this week, showing up at, you know,
Yeah.
I was about to call it the, I'm just going to call it the Honda for
Call the Honda.
the
Why
time
not?
being, though. The, I mean, I don't, I can't, I, damn it, I don't have the field in front of me, but I didn't, I looked at earlier on, and I didn't see many of the, you know, the Cantleys and Spieths and Thomases. Maybe they are in a
Huh.
field, but Rory is doing them a real favor. I mean, if I'm tuning in this week, of course he has won that tournament in the past. So if I'm tuning in this week for to the PGA Tour, I'm tuning in to watch Rory. So all is not lost in the relationship between Tory between Rory and the tour. But what I'm looking, you spoke earlier about the seminal member guest. I'll be looking to see who Rory, I mean, Rory will be playing with his dad, but who else will be in the four ball? I wonder if Jimmy Dunn will be in the four ball. That'll be the That'll be the big
Yeah.
telling one.
I don't think those Liv guys are going to be rushing back from Jeddah to play, but I mean, you
Yeah.
never know. I mean, they might. Dustin Johnson and Koepka, I believe, have both played in the past. They're both Jupiter area guys. But yeah, I don't know. I actually would love to be at this one. I got to think the mood at this one's going to be a little bit different. You're missing some players. Jimmy's appearances weren't great. Yeah, I just think that one might, there might be some interesting locker room chatter at this one.
Jeddah is only 8 hours ahead of Florida, Jeff, so I can pretty much guarantee that the guys won't be rushing back, and they will finish
Yeah.
at Sunday morning Florida time, maybe noon Florida time. Are you going to get jump, run to the airport, get on your private jet, and get back in time to play? No, you're not
No.
really, are you?
No. No.
So it'll be interesting. Maybe this could be Jake Knapp's big moment. He might get a call to come play in the seminar.
Oh, I think he's definitely getting a call. I
The
bet
well,
Nick
good for
Dunlap
him.
got a call.
Yeah, good for him. Meanwhile, I'll be quite happily at Pinehurst. I'm looking forward to that just because I keep going on about this kid. There's this kid at Auburn. He's playing at a UNLV's event this week. This kid, Koivin, what a player he is. And he's doing well this week, so I'll get to see him in the flesh for the first time in a couple of years. Next week, looking forward to that. Looking forward to the politics of the seminal member guest. Anything else to add to
Well,
next
no,
week,
I'm
Jeff?
just looking forward to what you say about what you see in Pinehurst in terms of the golf course. The USGA's new southern headquarters is just, I believe they've already started moving in. What the atmosphere is, tickets are still very available. What people are saying about that, I'm anxious to hear what you think of kind of where things are. And are you going to play any golf? Are you going to go see Southern Pines since they've redone it, or Mid Pines, or
I
Pine
might do,
Needles?
might yeah, might do. I'm certainly thinking the golf clubs.
Or
We'll just have to wait. I mean, haven't really worked out. I haven't even got a place to stay yet. I did notice I was remarking on the collapse of the Airbnb market. My goodness, who would have
yeah,
thunk it?
down there.
It's
Well, what do you mean? Because down there it is tough, but not everywhere.
well, down in Pinehurst. I mean, you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure people didn't tune into this podcast for this, but anyway, I'm guessing there's quite a
No, we
lot
have
of
a lot of
Airbnbs of you. Yeah.
golfers who travel. Tell me,
Yeah.
what do you
Well, I mean, there's lots of nice places for extremely cheap prices. I mean,
Oh, okay. Yeah, well,
that's
not
what
during the
I mean,
US
and
Open week. I tell you
well, really,
that.
well, I yeah,
Oh,
well,
yeah.
anyway, well, go, yeah, come next week, come see the Wake Forest Invitational or whatever it's
Oh,
called.
believe me. I
Yeah.
thought of seeing the prices. I thought about doing this one from home, but I can't not do the US Open in person. It's yeah, but it's well, good. Well, enjoy that. I mean, Southern Pines is such a great town, and have a drink at Ashton's, and don't go to the Bitter and Twisted Jim Moriarty's bar across the street unless you want to get into some rough conversations. That's a tough crowd there. But yeah, but mostly I'm just curious. I mean, it's a totally different golf course than the one you saw in 2005. It's
Yeah.
infinitely better. It just had a rough spring last time going into that US Open, so it was not well, I remember Donald Trump commented on it. It was very brown. I think they'll have it. Hopefully the weather will be better going into it, and they'll have it was really good by the time the women played. But yeah, they had a rough spring in 2014, so
Yeah.
it should be better this time. So yeah,
Yeah.
pop in USGA headquarters and tell them you think they need to deal with the driver.
There you go. I'll
That's
do
where the
that.
testing's all going to be done now.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that was a great US Women's Open, Michelle Wee, obviously. I remember. Really, really cool. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Jeff,
All
great
right.
po I was going to say great podcast. We'll leave others to judge that. But
Yeah, there
great
you
to
go.
speak to you. Great to speak to you. All the best. Take care. See you next week.
All right. Bye.
the throne. It's a wild love. It's a wild love.